Hello, welcome to another episode of Django Chat, weekly podcast on the Django web framework. I'm Carlton Gibson, joined as ever by Will Vincent. Hello, Will.
Hi, Carlton.
Hello. And this week we got back with us my fellow, Marius Feliciak, who's here. Hello, Marius.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. What are we going to talk about? We were going to talk about something.
Django 3.1, Carlton.
Right, so we're going to talk about Django 3.1, which is in beta now. So Marius, go on, you're the guest. You tell us, what's in the, what are the highlights? What are we looking for?
Well, tell people when it comes out.
Yeah, so we will have a final version at the beginning of August, on 1st August, I think, and release candidate 2 weeks before it. So it's currently is the best time to try it, to install it on your existing projects and see if everything works properly, especially with new features. So everyone that use, for example, JSON Field from Django contrib package can now try to use it directly from Django models. That's probably the easiest way to contribute to Django, to try the pre-release packages.
Yeah, because this is going to come out July 15th, so there'll still be a couple weeks for folks. We'll link to, there's a very comprehensive release notes that go through all these things, but we're going to spend this episode talking about them a little bit.
Yeah, so currently we have beta released, and on July 20, we'll have a first release candidate, and on 3rd August, the final release.
Okay. And the JSON field was done by Sage, who Google Summer of Code student from last summer. I want to talk about the features, but I also, if the two of you could take off your humble hats and just talk about what do you two have to do to prepare a new release? Because I know there's a whole lot of steps, but just to let people know what are all the things you have to do to get something ready to be pushed out?
So we have a release schedule. We have really detailed instruction, what to change, when, what should be done before the release. So we just need to remember to do not omit any step.
Yeah, and to update it when we make a change.
Right? Exactly.
When something's broken. The big issue, I think, is the point releases, like 3.0 or 3.1 or 3.2, like the major releases. They're the difficult ones because they're only once every 9 months, and the steps are, there's a lot more steps. It's like, what did we do last time? Oh, yeah, like trying to remember all those pieces can be tricky. And it's like, oh, and why aren't the docs building with the Chinese translation? And,
yeah, exactly. There is a lot of small steps that should be done, like, for example, open pull request in read the docs, or add a new classifier to PyPy, or add pre-release to Django project really run docs build, etc.
When this is your, what is it, second, third major release that you've been a fellow for, Marius? What number is it now?
The second. The second,
okay.
Yeah. That's okay. The second. And honestly, the first major release that we are making totally without Tim, I think.
Yes, yeah, so Tim Graham, I mean, we've had him on, and I just recall Carlton telling me about, doing it largely on his own, but with Tim's help. And so I imagine you went through a similar process of all the little steps that are documented and perhaps not documented.
But I think Tim's still secretly watching, because every so often there's a comment and it's really like insightful and to the point. And he's like, and has this been updated or something, something really like minutiae. And yeah. It's like, oh, good spot. Thanks.
Exactly. Okay, so let's talk about the highlights of the release. So one of them is that it requires Python 3.6 and up, right? It's not supporting lower versions of Python.
Yes. Yeah, so 3.5 is still supported.
Oh, it is?
Like it's still within. Yeah, sorry. Supported
oh,
by
sure.
Python.
Oh, sure, yeah, for
it's
Python,
not an
but,
end
not,
of life
but not
Python
Django
version, right? I mean, it's in what do they call it? Extended support. So it's only security fixes now for Python
right.
3.5. But in order to move Django forward, like the 3.5. So we're at the last two, so for 3.2 for the LTS, we drop the version. And then that will happen again, probably for 4.2, we'll probably go 3.7.
So this policy is quite clear. we are dropping Python version only after the LTS version. Yeah, so Django 2.2 will end its extended support after dropping support for Python 3.5. Yeah, so they will not support Python 3.5 before Django 2.2 will end its extended support. Python 3.6 will be supported a bit longer, so Django 3.2, for example, it's not enough to drop support for Python 3.6.
Well, so these are all the things as a developer that make Django great to work with, because it doesn't break on you, but I know it requires lots of extra work for you and, you know, the two of you and others in the community to maintain that non-breaking support.
Well, today, just today, Marius was fixing a test failure on 2.2 against Python 3.5. Like, you know, and it that gets harder and harder as you get, you know, when 1.11 was at the end and we were still supporting 2.7 on 1.11, and like a number of fixes every month were causing issues only on 2.7, only on 1.11. It's like, we forgot that. We've got to go back and change it because of this. And, you know, it just gets harder and harder for that long-term support as it gets older.
Well, and that's the type of work, too, that volunteers just really don't want to do either. because it's really not that much fun, but it requires a lot of focus and expertise to do. So, hence the fellows. So 3.1, so what's the headline? I mean, I'll tell you what I think, and then you guys can tell me what it actually is. To me, when people ask me, it's, you know, async views are in there. There's JSON fields. I'm excited about the new pathlib in the settings file. So when you run start project now, it will default to pathlib, which just makes setting your pathlibs a lot easier. But there's a host of other features. And maybe we could just start with async. So what should people take away from 3.1 and async? Is it, you know, the question is it finally ready to use in a Django project? Or what are we waiting on?
I will leave it to Carton. He's an expert.
Yeah, it's ready to use. So the first thing is, don't change anything. Just keep running your WSGI server. And then all of a sudden, you want to make some API requests to pull up some data from a couple of places. And so you can now just define, without changing anything else, you can define an async def view. Like, so instead of a def view, which is a sync function, you can find an async def view, which is an async function. And then you can use HTTPX or, you know, whatever your favorite networking library is, to go and make the API calls you want to do concurrently. And Django will run that for you in a thread. It'll run that single view in a thread, and you'll get concurrency in fetching the API views, but you haven't had to change anything else. So for a lot of people and a lot of use cases, that's kind of what you want to do. For years now, I've been spinning up Node.js projects on the side in order to make concurrent requests to an API in order to pull together data for a client. And then the last few years, we've been able to do that with Python web frameworks instead of spinning up. No, but now you can just define that view in your Django project, and that's super. And that's without doing anything else async related.
Well, and that relies in part on, I've just been updating my books, and one thing that in 3.0, when you run start project, you get the ASGI.py file with the ASGI server that powers all this. So someone who's updating, if they just update from like 2.2 to 3.1, do they need to manually add the ASGI.py file, or...
Right, no, but so this is the sort of great amazing thing about the views implementation is it will run async views fully within the WSGI pipeline. So you don't have to change anything to do this first level.
Oh, you don't need ASGI.py at all.
Asynchronicity. You can continue to run WSGI with GarnerCorn or whatever you're using, and you can just define these single async views to make use of concurrency within a thread pool to go and do think right. And that's why it's so beautiful, because you can just literally upgrade, and then you just think, I'd like to try fetching two HTTP requests simultaneously, and then when they're both back, I'll combine them and return them to the client. And you can do that without anything else. It's like, this is really dipping your toe in async. You don't have to change your way of thinking very much. You don't have, you just have to write this one async def view. So that's what's super. And then the step up, the second step, is if you wanted to get involved with response types that are more interesting. I don't know, let's say you want to do server-side events where you open a connection to the client and every so often you pump some more data down to it. So I don't know, like a ticker tape application, this would be, you know, the textbook example here. You open a connection and the server can every so often feed you some more information. These kind of more interesting things. At that point, you'd need to switch to ASCII. Mm-hmm. And you'd need to create an ASCII.py file, and then you'd either use Daphne or Uvicorn or Hypercorn or one of the ASCII servers. So this is instead of Gunnercorn as your application server to serve your ASCII pipeline. And what's amazing, so and the other side of the amazingness is that if you switch to ASCII, all your sync views
will exactly.
continue to work exactly as they had, because underneath the hood, Django is determining, is this view an async view or a sync view? And if it's an async view, I'll serve it the right way. And if it's a sync view, I'll serve it the right way as well. Now, there's a certain performance overhead to that, in that there's a certain context switching. Every time you context switch, there's a really small performance penalty. So if you're really, really, really after throughput, then you need to make sure that you're running ASCII with only ASCII middleware, with only ASCII view at the end. And if you've got ASCII all the way through, then you don't get any context switching performance benefits. But for most use cases, that extra teeny bit of throughput, that's not what you need for most use cases. Certainly not when you're beginning. Does that sound about right, Maris? Like, that's kind of my ASCII.
I can only add that if you really would like to use the entire async stuff, then you should probably land with Python 3.7. Because in Python 3.6, it is still a bit immature. And of course, everything works properly, but still, I think the journey has begun in Python 3.6, and in 3.7, it really works well.
And I think that's, like, as well, I'd just be up to date, because async.io is still evolving. And, you know, there's still debates about the API and how it looks and what the recommended call paths are and all this kind of stuff. And so if you're going to be using async, then do yourself a favor and get onto 3.8 or the latest versions rather than trying to run it in 3.6, because you're going to create yourself lots of issues there. I see issues on channels or on Daphne where it's like, oh no, if I updated to 3.8, this issue went away.
Well, as ever, it's like a car, Carlton, right? You have to tune it up and...
Yeah. You have to send your car in for a service.
Yeah.
Welcome to Django Chat, folks.
I wonder as well, and I don't have an answer to this, but I'll pose it to you two anyways. If perhaps one of the ways people start... So one of the things people think with async is, oh, now I can maybe replace Redis or some of these other services that are queue-based things. I mean, that's an imperfect statement, but I think that's one that someone could think that. Could you disabuse, you know, either of you of that comment? Like, oh yeah, async Django, so now I don't need, you know, Redis or Memcached. I say this because I've had that thought and because I'm asked that by my readers. So it is out there.
So, okay, so you're not going to get rid of, like, Memcache is totally different kettle of fish, right? Caching server, you're not going to get rid of that. And if you're using Redis in that same ballpark, you're not going to get rid of that.
Yeah, so not for
caching,
but for like queue stuff.
If you're using, right, but if you're going to use Redis as a queue, you're probably not going to get rid of that either, right? So in principle, we will be able to create hooks for lightweight background tasks that will just be able to spin off using an async. All right, go and do this async task in the back. Now, Starlet, Tom Christie's framework, has got that kind of ability already in it, and we keep looking at that and thinking, oh, maybe, you know, 3.2, 3.4.0, who knows? But it's not going to replace a queue. You know, it's not lightweight background tasks. Yeah, replacing your full your queue with years of battle tested coding behind it. No, I don't think you're going to replace that. Keep Django queue. Keep Celery if you're using that, or Huey. Came across.
Yeah, I saw you mentioned someone wrote a nice post about using Huey with Django.
So that's a nice lightweight option. But you're not going to replace those instantly. Like maybe over time, but this stuff is still fresh and young. And what's sort of, oh yeah, we could do this, doesn't mean it's, you know, the same as wrapping an existing task or function with a decorator and it just happening by itself because all of that's written.
I thought you'd say that. I just wanted to tee that up so you could disabuse that statement. And I mean, the cool thing about Starlet too, just with async, is, you know, there's this fast API framework that uses Starlet under the hood. And I'm sure, you know, we in the Django community will take some inspiration from how that's going, but that seems to be, I don't know if there's examples of it at scale, but it's very, people are enjoying using it. I've heard a number of developers who've built smaller things with it and really, really liked it.
I think Microsoft are using it a lot into, you know, in their stack around Azure and things like that. So, you know, it's very popular. And what's really great with ASGI is so cool, like, because every level of ASGI is a middleware. It's every app, every bit of every middleware and every view is an ASGI app, right? So you can nest. Yeah, it's kind of like an onion, but it's kind of like a tree as well, in that you can nest them inside each other, and you can have a middleware that would route between two ASGI apps. So let's say you're using Django, and then alongside of it you want WebSockets. Well, we've got channels, which is, you know, where you need still go for WebSockets even now. And then, but let's say you've got something that's written in Fast API, you could put that next to it, and it would, from the same server, and you could route it within your kind of ASGI framework and combine the best of both worlds. And if there's a nice middle ASGI middleware out there that you want to use, well, you can wrap your Django app in that ASGI middleware. And, you know, it's a lovely position for us to be in. It's kind of really, fertile. It's a really fertile environment for us to be building web apps in now. I think I'm quite excited about it.
Well, and Marius, this is a question for you. So testing, how does async testing work? Or how will it work? Because there's some of that now, and then going forward, how should people think about that?
Yeah, so with async views and middlewares, we also added a lot of chunks that can be used for testing, like a separate class of test client. So currently there is a async client that is built in testing framework that can or should be used for async stuff. To be honest, for me it was a big challenge to review the entire change related to async views, middlewares, and testing. But I think that's something that probably allows us to find at least few small regressions where a person that is not an expert in async world try to work with it. I think that's, now I'm a bit better in it, but still. So for async tests, you can now use async client. You still can use the same methods for testing get, post, or anything else. It is just called with await, so it need to be awaited, and instead of that, everything works similar.
But as well, there's one thing to note for test case, which is if you define an async def test in a test case, it will run in the right context and be run in an event loop for you. So you can test the asynchronous functions using Django test.testcase.
Yeah, that was pretty. That was very nice.
Which is nice.
Marius, if I could have you answer this. Can you describe to people what it's like mentoring a Google Summer of Code student? Because we've had them over in the past. We have several now. They add major new features. But I don't know if people, I know that people don't know what the mentoring role is like. So could you talk about maybe specifically with Sage? So we've had him on, and, you know, he's a student. He added cross DB JSON fields, so not just in Postgres. What is that process like, you know, for you as a fellow to mentor someone?
It was pretty smooth, to be honest. Maybe because Sage was really a hard worker, so he made a lot of job on his own. Yeah, so he made a lot of investigation about how it is supported in different DBs, because it's not really a straightforward thing. Because we have different implementation in different DBs. We have PostgreSQL where there is a native field, yeah, but in other databases we have, for example, text field that is just looks like JSON field. It's, for example, text field with some extra constraint that are built in a database. So it's extremely complicated. But yeah, it was really nice experience. To be honest, the hardest part was to polish it at the end, because it contains a lot of small pieces in different parts of Django. So we have changes in schema, we have changes in introspection, in different lookups implementation, decoders, encoders. We need to deprecate old fields. We added some extra system checks, etc. So a lot of different pieces that are on the different layers in Django. I can say that it was the biggest pull request I think that I ever merged to Django. It touches around 3,000 lines. Yeah, it has more than 400 comments. So before clicking merge, you need to check 400 comments and see if all of them are addressed properly.
Well, I think it's a great feature. I mean, it speaks to sometimes people, you know, want to know what database should I use with Django. And it is true that Postgres has more features, just like search, and just because people have built them. So it's nice to have more uniformity, but it takes a tremendous amount of work, obviously.
I have to say, Maris put just so much time and effort into polishing the PR, and Sage got it in place during his project and it was there, but then Maris went through and was able to adjust it and make sure it was going to be maintainable in the long run and clear up the implementations, and the amount of time he spent on it was a Herculean task. It was fantastic. And you know, at the end there's the way that key paths are determined, if you try and do a lookup on a nested JSON field, you know, like, so you've got my data with pets, with, you know, dog, Rex, so I want the dog who's got the name, you know, and you try and fetch that value. That's really complicated. It's just mind-bogglingly complicated. And fortunately, Marius finds it hard as well, so I wasn't too upset.
Yeah, you don't have to be like, oh, this is easy.
But, you know, to get that right and to get that into the state it's in and it's ready and so well done, Marius. I think that was super. What I want to ask, though, Marius, is if I've got my project and I'm on 2.2 and I'm using Postgres JSON field, what's the steps that I have to take to upgrade? Is it going to be easy for me or is it going to be difficult?
It should be extremely easy, to be honest. Should change imports from Django country PostgreSQL fields, JSON field to Django DB models, JSON field, and honestly, that's it. You also need to run migrations to create new migrations. But they should not impact your database at all. Yeah, and even if the old fields are deprecated, then we still will keep the stub fields, so you don't need to change historical migrations that use the old field. So it should be quite easy.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Okay, super. That's, well, you've put me at rest.
You know, beginners often ask about differences between databases, and almost without lying, I can say, well, they work all the same, you know, certainly for a beginner level project because of the Django ORM, but it takes, you know, Herculean levels of work to make that be the case. So just wanted to highlight that. And maybe, so there's currently two Google Summer of Code students. How's that going for both of you, right? I mean, there's progress with things they have to hit each time, but how much work is that for the two of you on top of everything else you do?
It's okay. It's like, reviewing an extra PR, and then, you know, every week or couple of weeks, I spend a teeny bit of time making sure I've caught up with the students and that, you know, they're doing their thing. So Casper is working on the Django stubs project, which is like the type stubs for Django. And he's working on the MyPy plugin for that, so that, you know, that will be hopefully be improved over the summer. And we've just done the first assessment, and he's merged a couple of small PRs and helped a couple of people, and he's going really well. And then Ahmad, who's working on Django itself, is helping to make the test runner work in parallel for Windows, and also now put on modern versions of Mac OS. So recently Mac OS changed the default process spawning method to, or forking method to, process start method to spawn rather than fork, which is a low level thing. But the difference is that a spawn is how Unix does it, and it inherits the parent process's memory space, basically. Whereas a spawn creates a whole new brand new process entirely. And from Python 3.8, that's the default process start method on macOS, because forking will stop working in a future version. And so from Python 3.8, the Django test suite doesn't run in parallel on macOS, which is a real pain. It's like, wow, because it goes from like 6 minutes to about 20. This is not a good change. So, you know, we're hoping to get back up to parallel running on macOS and on Windows, and he's hoping to add Oracle parallel running as well, because the Oracle test suite currently takes over an hour or something. It's like, come on, Oracle. But if we could, and only because we can't run it in parallel. But if we could get that working, then, you know, that we could cut our CI times and we could run Oracle tests more often, because quite often we don't run them because they take so long. And so it's quite a good project, and that's really interesting. And Tom Forbes and Adam Johnson are helping with that. And David Smith, who's a new contributor, is helping to on the project management side as well. So there's lots of people involved.
Great. Well, Google in particular has been very generous to Django, both with the Google Summer of Code, season of Docs, which Django's been accepted for. They also donated $5,000 to Django security efforts earlier this year. So Django's been a big help, or Google has been a big help to Django, excuse me. Okay, so other features. So there's so many features in 3.1. I don't know. You probably can't keep them all straight in your head. What is there to say about Pathlib? I mean, it's more elegant than the current way of doing it. But that's a a novice answer. What are the two of you excited about with Pathlib? You know, why was it added? Because it's a major change to swap that out.
Yeah, it's more readable, that's for sure.
Yeah, less things to type.
Okay, so what is it? Tell me what it is, Marius. What's this Pathlib thing all about?
From Django 3.1, basically all settings support Pathlib instead of the old way to do this. So we use all OS hooks to create proper paths.
They still accept SEP strings as well, right? Nothing's going to
work. Exactly.
So see if I've got a path. So like the classic one is based in your settings, right? And that would normally be, what was it? os.abs.path.absolute.dir.dirname, like this kind of horrible construction you do. And then now you can just create a path, which is path of the file. And then, you know, it's an object.
Yeah, file, parent, and that's it.
Yeah, it's just a lot easier to use. I mean, you've been able to use it on your own before, but now that it's just baked in and when you run start project, boom, beginners will have it. So I think it'll make...
Yeah, but also you couldn't, there's lots of settings you couldn't pass it to. So there's two things. So one is that everywhere that a path is needed, it will accept a path object instead of a string. And there's one place inside the code where we have to cast back to a string, that's in for SQLite, because it doesn't yet accept a string in that, a path object in that place. But we cast back for you. So everywhere that in the settings that you would have used a string, you can use a path. So that's the first bit. And then the second bit is that we've updated the template so that when you create a new project, they automatically use these new Pathlib objects.
What else? I mean, so thinking about things that people will see when they use 3.1. So one is the admin, right? There's the sidebar has been improved, a little bit easier navigation on it, I believe.
Yeah, so we have totally new sidebar on the left side on the screen that make navigation really easy currently.
Well, it's kind of cool. You've got all this giant screen, you know, real estate, and you've got, you know, we now use a little bit more of it more.
Yeah.
You don't need to use breadcrumbs to go back.
Right.
few screens ago, you can just choose a different model or a different change list or another different view that is delivered that you are currently using.
Right. Yeah, that'll be a lot easier than breadcrumbs. There's also an auth change. I'm checking the notes here, but where the hashing algorithms change, right? SHA-256 instead of SHA-1.
Yeah, exactly. So SHA-1 is still safe, but we decided to change hashing algorithm in multiple places, to be honest. So currently, by default, it is not used anywhere in Django. So cookies, sessions, signer, password reset mechanism, all of them are currently using SHA-2.6. And still all support for old hashing algorithm remains until Django 4.0. So even if you update to Django 3.1, then everything should work properly, even with old hashes.
And we set the secure referrer policy now.
Yes, that's the other one I was going to... So that now defaults to a different, a more secure setting.
I think it's same origin now.
Same origin.
Right, so what that means is you won't send cookies to, I don't know, third-party or requests from third-party sites, right?
Yeah, and actually I had a question about that because it was changed in 3.0 in the deployment checklist. And I'll put a link. It's in the Django forum. Carlton, you and Adam Johnson, because I think Adam Johnson made the change.
Adam knows most about this kind of stuff. He's holding it. He's got a Google Calendar reminders to check the spec to see, you know, when it's all updated.
Because it baffled me too. Because there was, you know, it changed and there were four options, and I was like on Mozilla, and I was like, oh my god, what is this thing? But
so the interesting thing with secure referrer policy that people have hit is Chrome. Now, if your site is embedded in an iframe, right? So if you're like Discuss as example, then Chrome
or Google Maps, if you toss it in
okay,
a site.
Yeah. So okay, if you were serving Google Maps, then Chrome defaults to the to not sending a cookie there unless you specifically set the string value none in for the secure referrer policy, and that wasn't. That was a change that just came in 2.2. And so people on 2.2 are having to create a middleware to work around that. And okay, it's not a tiny thing, but from 3.1, you can just set that in your settings file and that would just work. There aren't many people who are embedding their frames in their sites in iframes, but those who are, they'll, you know, that's useful for them.
Yeah. I want to ask, because 3.2 is already in process.
It's on the
looking
way.
Ahead. It's on the way. Marius, what are your thoughts on what can we look forward to in 3.2, you know, 9 months after 3.1 comes out in August?
So currently I have one big release blocker in my mind. So I would like to add functional indexes to Django in Django 3.2. So I think that currently is the biggest feature that I would like to include in the next release.
What about you, Carlton? Anything?
Well, yeah. So one thing that didn't quite make the cut for Django 3.1 was proper reload support for run server when you're running with ASGI. So at the moment, the best way to get that is probably to install channels and use channels version of run server. There is there's another option out there, Django ASGI run server, I think it's called, which pulls in Daphne and will do the runs, the reload for you. So that replaces the run server command. We need to get that in because it's not a great situation where for 3.1, people will be run server, but they won't be getting reload under the ASGI environment. So I'd like to get that done for 3.2. I'd like to get that in for 3.2.
When was reload added to run server? Because I remember using Django before that was the case. You had to quit and start. I mean, I know it was a while ago, but as a user, I remember that was one of those things. I was like, oh, this is so nice that I don't have to quit and restart my server all the time. Maybe it was 1.8, 1.9, something like that, but makes me feel a bit like a dinosaur. I'm like, I used to have to stop and start the server all the time.
No, I seem to recall there being like phases of it as well. It sort of had,
That's true.
It would detect Python changes, but not any other things. Or I can't remember exactly what, but... I mean, like, if you added a new template folder, that was never picked up. I don't know if it is these days.
Right. Well, and part of it is because, you know, if you make a change to your settings file, that's needs to be those environment variables loaded in. And so I think that was later on the reloading, you know, the HTML and CSS came earlier. Anyways, a usability thing. So anything else? This is, you know, we wanted to dive a little bit deeper into the 3.1 and 3.2, shed some light on the role of fellows. And it honestly, it makes me feel a little bit better about, I've been grumping around about updating my books, but thinking about all the things that the two of you have to do for Django in terms of back support makes me feel a lot better. So thank you for that.
All I'd say is that I don't think there's not that much that's explicitly on the roadmap. I mean, async was the big thing, right? Okay, so that's in now. And okay, we'll see what happens. So, you know, that needs to grow. It needs to mature. People need to start using it. You know, who knows where it goes next? There'll be loads of features to the ORM coming over the next 9 months that, you know, it's constantly ticking over. And wow, just the changes that are made over time are just super. But 3.1 is just, well, 3.0... point, you know, extra number, right? It's just, it's not a massive breaking change. It's not a massive jump. It's that evolutionary thing that Django does so well. And 3.2 will be more of the same. And, you know, that's what's exciting about it, is because you can be on the latest version without worrying.
How about you, Marius?
We will not remove any features in Django 3.2. So if you will bump to 3.1, then you are safe.
Yeah. Well, and you know, so this comes out July 15th. We're recording it 2 weeks before. People can still go and pip install --pre-Django and try out 3.1. And, you know, if you find any weird breaks, do let the Django community know, but it should be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, no, run it against your CI, please.
Yeah, the CI, yeah.
And tell us what went wrong.
Yeah, because currently it's easier to fix it. Yeah. Then you will need to wait for a month for a minor release to fix anything.
Well, Marius, thank you for joining us to talk about what's coming in 3.1. I know I've been, you know, looking at your pull requests, and I have some sense of the work that you and Carlton do, but not a full sense, but it's a lot to make it smooth. And so thank you for all that work.
Thanks.
Carlton, do you want to take us out? Where can people find more info on Django or the podcast?
Right. Well, on Django, you go to docs.djangoproject.com and, you know, releases, and read the 3.1 release notes. So you go /3.1 and releases.
Yeah, it'll be in the notes.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Yep. We'll link to how to upgrade too. There's Django docs on that. We're linking to how to upgrade your version properly.
Okay, that's a good idea. And then we're obviously Django Chat, and we're Chat Django on Twitter, and there's a website, djangochat.com. And join us next time.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.